There are a few pieces of legislation of such consequence. The hundreds of bridges in Minnesota and Wisconsin, the thousands of miles of roads, the broadband infrastructure, the cleaning up and the protection of our Great Lakes and our environment, a movement towards a clean energy economy so our children can go to school on zero emission buses, so our buildings are continuing to reduce our carbon footprint, and this part of the country is continuing to lead. That's what the bipartisan infrastructure bill means. That's what it means for each and every one of us, but it's about future generations. I had the privilege of serving for 12 years in Congress, and I had the privilege of serving on the Transportation Committee. And I'm going to use a point of personal privilege at this time. I can guarantee you one person who's not with us who would have been the happiest person you'd ever seen was Chairman Jim Oberstar from the great state. No one. And he talked about building something lasting. He talked about building something for our children. He talked about the vision that we needed. That's exactly what this bill did. That's exactly, as governors, what we can put to use. And it's exactly, as you see and you'll hear from this, of American workers with American steel building America's future together. That's what this bill was about. That's what the president's address last night told us. Our brighter days are ahead of us. We know that there's challenges, but the key that you saw is there's nothing we can't do if we just decide to put our minds together on this. And I said, coming here with Governor Evers, we joke a lot. I make a lot of bets on football and lose. I will admit that. So it's no more. That's it. The good Minnesotans there. But we know that our shared heritage, the folks who carved out this land, the folks who made the twin ports up here a critical piece of the infrastructure. When we're in Europe, they talk about these ports and the connection it makes on trade and the things that will happen. All of those opportunities are out there, that clean energy economy, that new future, and it was dependent on this piece of legislation, and it was dependent on the shared vision. So I am grateful to be here. I'm grateful to the president. I'm grateful to our members of Congress, to our mayors, who the sense of pride that they feel in this area that we all feel. It's amazing. And I said, I get the chance to introduce Governor Evers, and I asked him what you'd like me to say. He said, oh, it's pretty simple, that I'm just the best-looking, most effective governor in the Midwest. Tony Evers.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Good afternoon, Wisconsin. I am.
And humble.
And humble. Damn humble. It's great to be back in Superior, and I'm proud to welcome President Biden, First Lady Joe Biden, Governor Walz, First Lady Gwen Walz to UW-Superior campus. What a place. And welcome to Wisconsin, folks. I want to thank you, first of all, to Chancellor Renee Wachterf and the UW-Superior students and faculty for having us, and Senator Baldwin, obviously, and Mayor Payne, and all the labor partners and workers as well who are with us today. You know, it's clear from the president's speech last night that he's committed to building an economy that works for everyone. And guess what? Investing in our infrastructure is at the heart of that. And that's why we've been working to invest in our infrastructure here in Wisconsin. Our roads and bridges in Wisconsin have suffered for years and years because of lack of a meaningful investment in our state's transportation infrastructure. But when I ran for governor, I ran on the promise that we're going to fix the damn roads.
Yay! Yay!
And I'm glad to say that we've improved more than 1,770 miles of highways and bridges and more than 1,250 bridges. In fact, if you laid out those highways end to end, you could just about drive to Platteville and Denver and back. How about that, Wisconsin? Yeah. And we are also able to keep all 375 transportation projects on track during the 2020 construction season, which meant that we were able to receive $105 million in federally redistributed highway dollars from other states.
Yeah.
To invest back in our infrastructure, and thanks to those other states, I know Minnesota used theirs up. So it wasn't Minnesota. Keeping these projects on track were not only important about improving our roads, but ensuring people are able to keep working and businesses were able to stay afloat and folks were able to provide for themselves and their families. And that right there is the crux of this issue. By investing in infrastructure, we're not just investing in safer and more sustainable roads and bridges. We're investing in a stronger and more resilient economy and in jobs and small businesses and communities. It's the connecting dot. We're headed in the right direction, but we have far more to do, and we're going to need help from the federal government to do that. Thankfully, help is on the way. With this bipartisan infrastructure law, there are several billion dollars coming our way to build on the progress that we've made in fixing our roads and highways. This is once-in-a-generation investment, folks, and we are hoping to put that investment to good use with projects like reconstructing the Blatnik Bridge. This bridge is one of only two connections between Duluth and Superior, and more than 30,000 vehicles cross that every single day. But 60 years of exposure to the elements have led to corrosion and damage, and since 2018, the bridge has been required to be refixed every 4 years and have annual inspections. And without significant additional funding, the bridge will continue to decay and eventually be closed. Thankfully, the federal bipartisan infrastructure law is providing at least $225 million to each of the states for bridge replacement and rehabilitation projects, and will be able to compete for the bridge investment program for larger projects. And after today, Governor Walz and I had a chance to talk to the president about this project, and I hope the president might be able to put in a good word for us. And this is bigger. It's bigger than just the bridge between our two states. Governor Walz and I know that investing in our infrastructure is about building the support of future, the kind of future that we want for our states, and improving the quality of life for Wisconsinites, Minnesotans, and folks across this country. Look forward to continuing this partnership between our states and the Biden administration as we work to build on that future. So again, thank you, President Biden. Thank you, leaders from Washington that came to be with us today. And thank you all for being here.
Well said. Well said.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Joe Biden, accompanied by the First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden, and Vice President of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, Local 106, Gordon Smith.
Thanks, Joe. you. Well, and that's the band, I presume, right? Thank you to the band. Great job. Great job. You know, it's wonderful to be in Superior and Duluth, and places that mean so much to Joe and me, and with all of our friends. Governor Walz, Tim and Gwen, we were just together at a childcare event just a couple weeks ago. Tony and Kathy, thank you for welcoming us. And thank you to all of our elected leaders. So we traveled here just an hour ago, I guess, from Washington. And you really have a great bunch of representatives with lots of energy, and they're a lot of fun to travel with. On another cold winter morning, you know, much like today, I held our family Bible and watched my husband take the oath of office. In that moment, he was the man I fell in love with so many years ago. A father of... Okay. I guess I don't tell him enough. A father of two boys standing in the wreckage of unthinkable loss, who stitched a broken family together with grit and grace. He was the man who took home the train home to Delaware every night because he knew that showing up for the smallest moments can sometimes mean the most. He was the senator who learned that, you know, to get up when he got knocked down and fight even harder for what he knows is right. The vice president whose steadfast counsel helped guide our country through many storms. That day, he was Joe. And then, suddenly, he became something else, too. The President of the United States. Yeah. It felt like Americans across the country were holding their breath in the aftermath of 4 years of chaos. But as Joe stood there, shoulders back, eyes shining with fierce optimism, I could see his determination to bring us together, to lead us forward to a better America. And every day since, he has worked to do just that. Millions of families have been able to send their children back to school and find jobs and catch up on bills. They've been able to finally take a breath. We still have a long way to go. Our world faces incredible challenges, but things are so much better. You were right to put your faith in Joe Biden a year ago. In the face of uncertainty, he is unshakable. Despite deep divides at home and abroad, he knows how to bring people together, how to rally the world when tyrants reach for power. He never loses sight of what this is all about, the people he serves. When Joe goes to bed at night and when he wakes up in the morning, All he thinks about is how to make life better for you and your family. It's just who he is. It's who he's always been. He will never stop working for you. He will never stop fighting for you. Thank you. Now, I want to bring up our next speaker, a painter, a father, a mentor, a man who knows the meaning of Union Strong. He's worked hard to help make this area a better place to live, and we're happy to have him with us today, Gordon Smith.
My name is Gordy Smith, and I'm a member of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 82, Local 106. I am honored to be with you here today. I've been a painter for 31 years, but I started as a non-union painter. I became a member of the IUPAT when our shop was organized in the early 1990s. I was younger at the time and didn't understand unions, but taking that action really made my life better for me and my family. As a union painter, I've had the opportunity to work on many different types of projects, from mines and power plants to bridges and commercial construction. Over time, I grew to appreciate my union membership more and more. Being part of the IUPAT meant that my wife, Barbara, and I were able to raise our son, Michael, and help put him through college in a certified auto tech program. Now he has a good union job, too. Being part of the IUPAT has given me not only just a job, but a career. Every worker, even you, can have the same opportunity I've had. For many years, those of us in the building and construction trades have heard the promise of massive infrastructure investment, but those promises were never kept. President Joe Biden and his team have finally delivered on that promise. The bipartisan infrastructure bill gives us the opportunity to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure and put another generation of people to work in the process. Throughout the Midwest, we have thousands of bridges, like the Blocknick Bridge here in Superior, in need of repair. The investment in the nation's infrastructure is vital to our communities. Everyone needs to be able to safely to go to work, school, and family events. I'm proud that here and across the country, my sisters and brothers are at work coating these bridges, and it's not just to make them look good, it's to keep them strong, safe, and protected from corrosion. One of my favorite things about being part of the Painters Union is the opportunity to mentor younger brothers and sisters who are serving their apprenticeship. I get to teach them skills and pass a trade that they can take pride in and will provide for their families. The resources that will come into Wisconsin to rebuild public facilities and transportation infrastructure will provide stable careers for the next generation of Northland IUPAT members, and you can join us. I'm not someone who often gets up in front of people to share a piece of my story, so I certainly never thought one day I'd share the stage with the president. I am so proud to be here with all of you today, and a president who doesn't just talk about fixing things, but puts his words into action. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
I'll tell you a story. Hadn't planned on this. When Jill and I met and fell in love, she let me know her favorite day in the calendar was Valentine's Day. The first Valentine's Day that we were together when I was vice president, the vice president's office faces the Eisenhower building, a big granite building you see on the other side of the White House. And there's a triple set of stairs coming down from that building, and they look right in the vice president's office as you come down. And the press comes down that way all the time. And so the night before this Thanksgiving, Valentine's Day, the first one, Jill got, as a typical professor-teacher form, she got the maintenance guys to bring up a 16-foot ladder. And on, I think there are a total of, 19 panes of each in each window, big panes of glass. And with that erasable paint you can have, she put a heart in every single of the four windows, saying, "Joe loves Jill." And that night, my press guy got a call from CBS Morning News. Would I be on CBS Morning News to talk about Valentine's Day? He said, "You ought to do it." So I did. And while we're getting ready to, while we're getting ready in the office, all the lights are down, and I think I've told my colleagues in the House, the Senate, this story. While it's dark, they're fixing the lights, and I'm sitting knee-to-knee with a woman named Juju Chang, who used to be work for CBS. And while they're fixing the lights, she looks at me, she says, "Everybody says you and your wife have a great love affair." And I said, "I think so." And I said, "But everybody knows I love her more than she loves me." And she responded, my word, "That's what everybody says." And then she said she had done a study that she had been on, I guess, two or three parts on the morning show over a period of weeks before. And I think, don't hold me to this, I think it was Yale and Stanford had done this study. What makes marriages last the longest and the most romantic? You can always tell when the couple is not only in love, but when it's romantic, no matter how old they get. And she said, "You know what it is?" I said, "No." She said, "It's when the husband loves the wife more." I want to tell you, Jillie, this was worth the trip to come out here today. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If the Secret Service agents weren't sworn to secrecy, they could tell you they've never heard anything like that said from a podium by Joe. I love Wisconsin and Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you. Hello, Wisconsin. And if you hear me across the river, hello, Minnesota. I'm Jill Biden's husband, Joe. And Gordon, thank you for that introduction. And Governor Evers and Governor Walz, and thank you both for welcoming to both your states. And Mr. Mayor Jim Payne, thank you for the passport. And Emily from Duluth, the mayor of Duluth, when we got off the plane, I don't think she had a coat on. She had on I tell you, you're a tough kid. Thank you for the passport to both your cities. And thanks for three outstanding senators. And I mean that sincerely, all friends. Tammy Baldwin, Amy Klobuchar, Tina Smith, and Congressman Mark Pocone and Ron Kind. You got a hell of a delegation, all of you. Last night I was with your senators and representatives along with their colleagues in Congress to speak about the State of the Union. Together, we sent an unmistakable signal to Ukraine and to the world that we, the United States of America, stand with the Ukrainian people. We stand with them. And Vladimir Putin, Vladimir Putin's latest attack on Ukraine is premeditated and unprovoked. He's rejected repeated efforts at diplomacy. He thought the West and NATO wouldn't respond. He thought they could divide us at home, but he was wrong. We were ready. We spent countless hours unifying the European allies. We countered Russia's lies and truth. We countered them by letting them know what was being planned. And now the free world is holding him accountable. Putin is now isolated from the world more than ever and will continue to aid the Ukrainian people as they defend their country and help ease their suffering in the process. When history of this era is written, Ukraine will have left Russia weaker and the rest of the world stronger. Folks, they're amazing. They're amazing people. You see those scenes. I've been to Ukraine. I've spoken to the Rada. I've spent much time there over the years. They're amazing people. And we're growing stronger at home as well. As I said last night, there is no greater testament to the grit and resilience of the American people than the progress you've all made in the middle of a pandemic. Thanks to the American Rescue Plan, we lifted the country out of crisis, created 6.5 million jobs, more jobs than any American has ever created in a single year. Our economy grew. Our economy grew at 5.7%, the strongest growth in 40 years. And Vice President Harris and I, we ran for office with a new economic vision for America. Invest in America. Educate the American people. Grow the workforce. And build an economy from the bottom up and the middle out, not just from the top down. Because we know that when the middle class grows, the poor have a way up, and the wealthy do very, very well. Everyone does fine. My rescue plan reflects that vision, and that was just the first step. We also had to invest in the country itself. America used to have the best infrastructure in the world, the best bridges, roads, airports, et cetera. Now our infrastructure ranks number 13 in the world, according to the World Economic Forum. You can't compete for jobs in the 21st century if we don't fix that. That's why it was so important to pass the bipartisan infrastructure law, the most sweeping investment to rebuild America in all of American history. Bipartisan. And I want to thank your senators and representatives here today for helping lead that charge. And that was literally what they did, lead the charge. When I signed that infrastructure law 100 days ago, we hit the ground running, announcing $100 billion in new investments to create jobs for millions of Americans, modernizing our roads, our airports, our ports, our waterways. And we'll do it all to withstand the devastating effects of climate and to promote environmental justice in the process. You know, we're building a national network of 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations, so Americans can own electric cars, reduce pollution, and lead the way to clean energy future. That legislation is going to allow us to replace all the lead pipes in this country so every child can turn on a faucet at home or in school and drink clean water. In the days of having to pull your child up outside of a McDonald's to do their homework because there's no internet in your home and no internet in your region, and we provide affordable high-speed internet to every American, urban, rural, suburban, tribal. And that's big for rural communities. It helps farmers engage in precision agriculture, knowing when they should sell their products, and so much more. As I've announced last night, this year, we're going to start fixing 65,000 miles of highway and 1,500 bridges in disrepair. Your governor is going to use some of that funding for this law to modernize one of the most important bridges in this region, the one you look out the window and see here. Look, the Blatnik Bridge, you all know this bridge well. to bridge that connects our cities and your cities and your state, a bridge that carries people to work and carries goods out of your port. You know, when the Husky oil refinery exploded in Superior back in 2018, this bridge was one that many of you took to get your families to safety. And you know it matters. What you may not know, as was mentioned earlier, the bridge is 61 years old at the end of its useful life. The corrosion over the years has lowered the weight it can sustain safely handle. And by the way, I wasn't long ago, you may have seen in all the news clips, I was in Pittsburgh. I arrived in Pittsburgh a little early, but thank God we arrived when we did, because just two hours earlier, a bridge that is as high off the ground as this bridge collapsed completely. Completely. You should have seen it. It was astounding to look at, for the same reasons this bridge is in trouble. And guess what? Thank God there were only a few vehicles on the bridge. No one was killed. You should have seen it. It was astounding how no one died. Had it occurred just 3 hours later, you would have had all those school buses, all those children, all the thousands of people across that bridge. There's so many bridges in this is the United States of America, for God's sake. So many bridges in a similar condition. And that is outside. This bridge also has outdated design. Tight curves led to higher than average crash rates on this bridge. The bridge isn't alone. There are 979 bridges in Wisconsin, 661 bridges in Minnesota in poor condition, along with nearly 7,000 miles of highway between your two states that need repair. And now, after years of talking about infrastructure, we're finally getting it done. Finally. And by the way, instead of Infrastructure Week, we're going to have an Infrastructure Decade. Decade. Look. Back in January, I announced the largest investment on our bridges in American history, a total of $40 billion in funding for bridge improvement. $40 billion, including $12.5 billion to fix the most economically significant bridges in this country, like the Blatnik Bridge. And on top of that, over the next 5 years, based on formula funding, the bipartisan infrastructure law will provide Minnesota an estimated $5.4 billion. And Wisconsin, $5.4 billion. For highways and bridges. We sure don't want you to miss any of the Vikings-Packer games. Oh, man. You guys talk to one another? Well, we don't much in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but that's a different story. In addition, even more funding is available to the states through competitive programs. So I believe your governor are going to put their heads together and secure the funding they need to finally get this done. Putting hardworking Americans on the job, rebuilding this bridge with U.S. steel, keeping commerce flowing freely, and keeping families in Superior and Duluth safer and better connected. But this legislation is about much more than the bridge or the bridges. It's about opportunity. Opportunity across the region and across the country. Investing in your port, your airports, and more. This isn't just about bridges and highways. It goes much beyond that. And I'm here at the intersection of all of these things. Your airport, your ports, the river, the lake, the bridges, the highways. It's also about the historic investments we're making in the Great Lakes. I don't have to tell anyone here. I went to school and I grew up on one, not grew up, but I lifeguarded on one of the Great Lakes on Syracuse, New York. Great Lakes provide drinking water for 41 million people. They support more than 1.3 million jobs. And 2 weeks ago, I visited Lorain, Ohio. And I announced an investment, something we've been promising a long time, all the places that have to be repaired, both in Canada and in the United States. But I announced $1 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure law. Accelerating cleanup of sites where polluted waters and wastewater treatments have given the Great Lakes and put them at great risk, including the St. Louis River, which flows between your states. One study found that for every dollar spending cleaning up the Great Lakes, we generate $3 to $4 in economic benefit. It's a good investment. And it's badly needed. There's more fresh water in these lakes than any other single place in the whole world. But folks, it's not only the investment we're making in the Great Lakes. On the opposite end of Lake Superior, from where we stand, the Sioux Locks connect this lake to other Great Lakes. Those locks are a gateway, connecting the things that we make here in this country to the rest of the world. 7,000 vessels and 90% of America's iron ore move through those locks every year. That ore makes nearly all the high-strength steel that goes into American-made cars and appliances. In January, I announced nearly $500 million to upgrade the Sioux Locks, moving goods faster while reducing costs, creating a hell of a lot of jobs and maintaining them. We're also doubling the investment we're making in our ports, including the port of Duluth Superior, which was awarded an $8.4 million grant to make critical improvements. Along with a $12 million investment for the Army Corps of Engineers to reconstruct the dock wall, the vessel yard, and the Duluth Harbor Basin. Look, these investments will help fortify our port while strengthening the local economy. When we use taxpayers' dollars to build America, we buy America. For a long, long time, since the 30s, there's been a law saying when a president of the United States spends taxpayers' dollars on American projects, whether it's an aircraft carrier or railings in a public building, when they buy those products, they should buy American. But there's been an exception in the law up to now. It says that if, in fact, the product is not immediately available in the United States, they can buy it abroad. The federal government spends about $600 billion a year to keep this country safe and secure. And that law has been on the books, as I said, for almost a century. Taxpayers' dollars. But guess what? In my administration, the entirety of it, from beginning to end, has to be built and made in America to be used. Not a joke. We're actually doing it. We will buy American to make sure everything from the deck of an aircraft carrier to steel on the bridge is made in America. Look around the country. American manufacturing is coming back. Once again, we're seeing the pride that comes with stamping products made in America. Companies are choosing to build their new factories here, when just a few years ago, they would have built abroad. Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, as my Senate colleagues will tell you, he had a great saying when we announced what was happening in Ohio. He said, "It's time to bury the label Rust Belt." Well, that's what we're doing. As I said last night, Intel is building a $20 billion semiconductor megasite just outside of Columbus, Ohio. Up to 8 state-of-the-art factories in one place. And by the way, the people going to be working in those factories, you know what he told me they're going to average pay is going to be? $135,000 a year. Yeah. 10,000 jobs, and most of them union jobs. Making a computer chip the size of a fingertip. The power of the world in our everyday lives, smartphones, the internet, technology that doesn't even exist today. And if Congress passes the Bipartisan Innovation Act that's on their desk now, Intel is ready to increase their investment from $20 billion to $100 billion. Intel alone. Ford has invested $11 billion to build electric vehicles, creating 11,000 new good-paying jobs across the country. GM is making the largest investment in its history, $7 billion to build electric vehicles, creating 4,000 jobs in Michigan. The Union Pacific Railroad, when I was in Pittsburgh, I met the folks who run that. Union Pacific Railroad just announced the purchase of the largest ever purchase of electric locomotives made in Erie, Pennsylvania, in the same plant, by the way, that the guy who turned on our lights built a factory. All told, we've created 369,000 new manufacturing jobs in America just last year. Don't tell me we can't be a manufacturing center again. We can. We have to keep this story going. Well, we know that despite this historic recovery, too many families are still struggling with higher costs. I get it. Our top priority must be getting prices under control. Look, our economy roared back faster than most predicted, but the pandemic meant businesses had a hard time hiring enough help to keep their workers in the production. The reason why the cost of housing went up and new housing is because no one's there to make sure they had the 2x4s to be built, to build a home, because people weren't in the factories. And because people were making a lot more money than before, there was a lot of cash at hand, and they did not use that cash to go out to the restaurants or go on vacation. They used it for hard products. And the pandemic disrupted global supply chains. When factories close, it takes longer for goods to get from the warehouse to the stores, and prices go up. Look at cars. Last year, there weren't enough semiconductors to make all the cars people wanted to buy. They had the money to buy them. But there weren't enough, literally enough cars, because we invented those chips when we went to the moon, but we didn't make them anymore. They're made in the rest of the world. So prices went way up. One-third of the reason for inflation was the cost of these additional cost of automobiles. So we have a choice. One way to fight inflation is to drive down wages and make Americans poor. I have a better way to fight inflation. Lower your cost, not your wages. We're going to make more cars and semiconductors in America, more infrastructure and innovation in America, more goods moving faster and cheaper in America, more jobs that you can earn a living, a good living by here in America. Instead of relying on foreign supply chains, let's make it in America again. There's a lot more to my plan to lower costs and lower the deficit. By the way, we're going to lower the deficit by $1 trillion this year. These guys talk about how they always are worried about us spending. We're lowering the deficit. No one's ever done that. But look, I've kept you long enough. There's a lot more I'm inclined to say, and I don't want to get going. I don't want to get wound up here. But let me close with this. Look, I am truly more optimistic about America today than I've ever been. I really mean it. We're on a path to win. The economic competition of the 21st century that we face with the rest of the world. I told Xi Jinping, who I'm told I've met with more than any other world leader, that it's never been a good bet to bet against the American people, never. Given half a chance, they have never, ever, ever, ever let the country down. We're the only nation that has always turned every crisis we've faced into an opportunity. No other nation you can name has gone through a terrible circumstance and come out at the other end worse off than they were before the circumstance occurred. We're stronger today than we were a year ago. And we're going to be stronger a year from now than we are today. So let's keep building. Let's continue to give families a fighting chance. And let's meet this moment together. Folks, one last thing I'd like to say to you. The other reason why I'm so optimistic is because of the younger generation. You know, we are a country that is very diverse. And for the longest time, and we still have some serious resistance to diversity in this country. But guess what? The younger generation doesn't feel that. The generation that goes to this university, the generation that's in high school and up through age 30, look at them. Look at how they interact with one another. They make no distinctions based on race. They make no distinctions based on gender. Think of what's happening. One of the things that I'm confident about is they are together, and they want the nation to be together. And one of the things I promised I would do, and I've gotten criticized for it, but I'll just flat out admit it, and I'm not going to stop. My administration is going to look like America. Look like America. For example, in my administration, we have more women than we have men. A little bit. That's because all the women in my life are smarter than I am. We also have the greatest diversity we ever had. Look, folks, there truly is nothing beyond our capacity. There really isn't. We're the most unique nation in the history of the world, and that we're the only nation built on an idea, not geography, not built on the notion of race or religion or ethnicity. None of that fits the description of the United States. Built on an idea that we hold these truths to be self-evident. That all women and men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. We've never lived up to it. We've never walked away from it. And every generation has moved that dial closer and closer and closer. And we badly need it now in a world that is so close. Look, folks, your kids are going to see more change in the next 10 years than we've seen in the last 50. Because of the changes in technology and so much more. We've got to be ready. America's always been ahead of the curve because we do hold these truths to be self-evident. Again, we're not perfect. We're not even close. But we never have walked away. And Vladimir Putin was counting on being able to split up the United States. Look, how would you feel if you saw crowds storm and break down the doors of the British Parliament, kill 5 cops, injure 145, or the German Bundestag, or the Italian Parliament? I think you'd wonder. Well, that's what the rest of the world saw. It's not who we are. And now we're proving, under pressure, that we are not that country. We're united. And folks, that's how we were able to make sure we kept Europe united and the free world united. A vote in the United Nations to condemn Putin. 141 countries voted to do that. In the UN General Assembly. Several abstained. China abstained. Didn't vote with them, but abstained. India abstained. 7 countries abstained, I think it was the number. They're alone. And they did what they did, in my view. He did what he did because he thought he could split NATO, split Europe, and split the United States. We're going to demonstrate to the whole world. No one can split this country. Thank you all so very much. Thank you.